MNSI is manganese silicides, and we're going to be looking at the structure and magnetic properties of these epitaxial thin films.
Sorry, can you speak a little louder?
So the interest in these samples is that the Curie temperature has been observed to be about 50% larger in these thin films compared to bulk. So we're going to look at the change in magnetic properties through epitaxially induced strain. What I'm going to be talking about mainly is a brief introduction of spintronics and more background with our MNSI, our sample procedure, how we looked at it using a transmission electron microscope, structural observations, and a small tiny bit on the magnetic properties. Right. So, spintronics is mainly the manipulation of electron spin as opposed to the charge. So, this has the opportunity of making faster and lighter devices in terms of magnetic-resistive random access memory. And the main mechanism of that is spin-torque transfer, as shown here in this diagram. And that uses helical magnets, such as MNSI. So spin-torque transfer to ferromagnetic materials and a non-magnetic material. And this is used to produce logic code, like binary ones and zeros, by if you have the two ferromagnetic materials being parallel in their polarization or magnetization, then you get really low magnetoresistance. And if they're anti-parallel, you get really high, corresponding to a 1. So that's why they're useful. So here's our procedure for making our MNSI samples. We use molecular beam epitaxy, and that's there. That's at Dalhousie University. And actually, as Chloe explained, for molecular beam epitaxy. And we evaporated our manganese onto our silicon substrate at room temperature. And then we put it into an ultra-high vacuum and heated it up to 400 degrees Celsius to do a solid phase reaction as done here to make our MNSI. Then the sample was cooled to around 40 degrees and put on a protective cap. Over here is just a diagram of the lattice for more structure or background. So this is our sample preparation. We did plane views this way, just showing, again, the layers, the amorphous silicon, the epitaxial, and the substrate. And we threw this into our transmission electron microscope, and that's represented by this electron beam. So here's our transmission electron microscope. This is actually the one at Acadia University. It's a Philips CM30. And as per the name, it uses electrons as a viewing medium, and they're controlled through magnetic apertures. Through our experiments, we mainly had it running at a 300 kilo-electron volt power. So you would mainly our highest resolution possible in this machine. And as you can see, that's a cutaway there, or here. And this is also two types of viewing that you can do with the TEM, imaging and diffraction patterns. So this is a diffraction pattern as viewed in a TEM. Basically, it is the sample viewed in reciprocal space. For those with quantum, it's momentum space or Fourier transforms. It's just something to relate to. Also, it can be explained through Bragg's law, shown here, as with parallel planes of atoms, when diffractive light, when the reflected light interfere constructively, you get a diffraction spot. There's also bright field imaging, which uses the transmitted beam, and dark field imaging, which uses the diffractive beam, scattered light, through the use of a selected area aperture. So here's one of our diffraction patterns from our MNSI samples. These spots are from the silicon substrate. And these are from the MNSI, or epitaxial layer. The numbers just correspond to the planes that they're in, just to give you an orientation when you're looking at the crystal lattice. So here again is our diffraction pattern. Now we're going to look at each one of those dots, the MNSI dots. And as you can see, we have these two domains occurring. These are dark field images, by the way. When we look at the bright field, we don't see those domains in the bright field, but as soon as we go to the scattered light, you see that we have almost equally occurring domains, inverse domains. The reason for this is that MNSI does not have an inversion symmetry. It's a chiral substance. So this is right-handed, left-handed, and as you can see, that creates these domains. And this has an effect on the magnetic properties, which I'll talk about in a second. This is the cubic lattice, or cubic unit. And as Diana said, we have a cubic lattice here, and our lattice parameter for MNSI is 0.45. Our silicon lattice is 0.54. So there's not much of a match at the interface. You can imagine that they're not going to mesh very well. So when we kind of took advantage of that, and when we annealed the MNSI onto the substrate, we rotated it 30 degrees with respect to the substrate so that we would get a 3% lattice mismatch. So smaller than if you just put them together, but kind of played around with it. And that's represented here. So the lattice mismatch creates tensile strain in the substance because it wants to be a certain length, but it can't because of the lattice parameters. So that image here is how we measure the strain. This image here occurs because of double diffraction occurring in the sample. So we have our diffractive beam coming through the silicon, the amorphous layer, hitting the manganese silicide, and that's what the center spot is here. But when it goes into the silicon substrate, the diffracted beam from the MNSI creates doubly diffracted beams in the substrate, giving us our little circle of dots. Had there not been any strain, all those seven dots would correlate into one. So we know there's strain there. To measure the strain, in plane strain, so along this way, we can take the distance across here as our delta G and relate it to our distance here in the silicon as our G ref. And through that measurement, you can measure the in-plane strain when we found this to be 0.54 for an 11 nanometer thick MNSI layer. So this is the accumulation of our data. The top is TEM gathered data for in-plane strain, as mentioned exactly the method before. The bottom is the out-of-plane strain. So you can imagine we're stretching a sample, and there's going to be a reciprocal out-of-plane strain from the compressiveness of that stretch. So that was measured through X-ray diffraction. And you can kind of see that's kind of like a mirror image of the in-plane. You expect it to decrease with decrease in thickness, but then we get some kind of relaxation here. And weren't actually fond of that happening. And we think that this could be through possible interstitial defects. So it shouldn't be happening, but it is. And we're going to look into that more by comparing the elastic constants. So here, this dotted line is the elastic constants for bulk MNSI, so a larger, thicker sample of MNSI. And that is 0.19. It's constant. It's just a straight line. When we look at our thin films, we get somewhat of a nice correlation here. But then again, it's changing with the thickness, which we don't overly want our elastic constants to change with thickness. So again, something's happening. And it can't just be explained by the thinness of our sample. So through that, we look at our magnetic data to see if there's an effect there as well. So all our measurements were made with superconducting quantum interference device, or the SQUID, also housed at Dalhousie University. We measured the remnant magnification and the field-cooled magnetization. And this is we also compared our tensile strain measurements with compressive strain as measured in the bulk sample. That's been well documented. We've known that. And this is for the volume strain here, just as a nice comparison. So we see that with our compressive strain, it correlates here with our tensile up to or greater than 10 nanometers. Below, we're still getting this decrease in the Curie temperature here. I should mention that the Curie temperature is where a ferromagnetic material starts becoming paramagnetic. It loses its magnification, or magnetization, sorry. So again, we're thinking that defects are affecting this data. And one possibility of the interstitial defects is that it's adding extra layers. See here, the layers kind of come down really nice and smooth into the interface. But here, they don't. They're adding extra layers to try to compensate for the strain in the lattice. So now, to compare our strain data with the Curie temperature data. So we've seen this before. We get a nice, or not nice, data for our thin films. And then we put our Curie temperature data over top of it. And we can see that they have a strong correlation between the elastic constants and the Curie temperature. They pretty much follow the same pattern. We think that this indicates a common origin in why this decrease is happening. And we also believe that it's possibly from interstitial defects, such as point defects or misfit dislocations and other type of interstitials. So, and if you are interested in this and want to know more, because we did do more, I just didn't put it all in, you can check out our paper here at Phys Review B. And so some conclusions. We got strong correlations between the structure and magnetic properties. The epitaxially induced strain causes a volume expansion, and greater than 10 nanometers, the increase in cell volume is consistent with the increase in Curie temperature, as seen from the compressive to tensile strain chart. But lower that, it deviates from the expected behavior. And it can't just be explained by the finite size. So there must be, or could be, some common origin. We do believe that they're interstitial defects, but it is an open question. It's really hard to try to separate the finite and the interstitial defects in, well, our observations. Anyways, I'd like to thank my supervisor, Dr. Michael Robertson, and Ted Munchesky, Dr. Ted Munchesky, the Acadia Physics Department and Acadia Center for Microstructural Analysis, and CERC for funding, PI and IQC for the, and the organizers for having this great conference, and you guys for listening to me. Thank you very much.